Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Tass of Baltimore. We call this thing Baltimore Positive. This one's going to be a real good one. It's been a while since I've had my guest on, but before I do that, I need to let you know we're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour beginning on Friday at Costas. I will have the last batch of the Magic 8-Balls to give away. I think we're going to have some Back to the Future scratch-offs, if not some Monopoly scratch-offs, when we fire things back up at the Beaumont next Wednesday. We will be at Cooper's Pub on the 23rd, and then we will be at Coco's Pub on the 30th of this month. Lots of guests, lots of cool people coming out. We had Mark Viviano last week. Jamie Costello's coming out later on in the month. And it's sort of old home week because it is baseball season. The Orioles have only really played a handful of meaningful seasons since the last time I departed with this gentleman. I think his brother left here 24 years ago. We welcome in one of our defending champions. He's now some sort of weird elected official up in Pennsylvania. I mean, it feels like you're 100 states away, but I feel like I can reach out and touch you. And, you know, Luke shares the same driver's license as you do. Mark Messina returns to us. And, dude, I tried to get you on the football season. I tried to get you on before the Dallas game, after the Dallas game, during the Dallas game. I'm collecting 1971 belt buckles. I have a Dallas Cowboys belt buckle for you that I've gotten into my weird belt buckle collection. Are you running things? I mean, you're like busy, right? You're like a duly elected official of some kind.
Yeah, I am busy. I'm busier than I should be. I just got less busy because I was coaching basketball too, and now I'm not the basketball coach anymore. So life has settled down a little bit. But yeah, busy is good though. You know that. Busy is good.
Well, yeah. Well, update everyone on you and your brother. I mean, your brother shows up from time to time. He was here in Baltimore doing a Cal thing like 2 weeks ago. I got the pictures the day after, and I'm like, I haven't been in a room with your brother. Last time I talked to your brother was during the World Series, on the field, sometime in the aughts. I don't even know when it was, or playoff game, sometime like that. I mean, it's been 20 years since I talked to your brother,
Long
but
time.
you and I, you know, we catch up, but your brother does get into Baltimore. He is a Hall of Famer.
Well, our old friend Louis Bernie sent me a message and he said, "Are you going to be there?" And I said, "For what?" And he's, and those are the circles. I tell you probably never heard this story, but we live right here where the Little League World Series is. And I was there one day as a working media credential. This is before my political career. And this other guy who's a media guy who with local television, and he's the camera interview guy and all that, great guy. And he says, "Hey," and this is the summer that Mike got into the Hall of Fame. So Mike got inducted in July. This is Little League World Series of August. And he says, "Hey, do you think I could get 5 minutes with your brother?" And I was like, "Yeah, probably." I said, "When do you want to do it?" And he goes, "Well, I'd like to do it right after he throws out the first pitch." And I just looked at him and said, "Is Mike here today? Is he throwing out the first pitch?" And he just turned and walked away. And I didn't even know he was there. So, like events come and go. We're old now. You don't know everything that everybody's doing anymore.
You're not coaching college, high school basketball together anymore, right?
No. Well,
No.
actually, what's happening is I'm not doing it anymore. My son was senior, and so he's heading off to college, and now I'm an empty nester. And I've got this. I got some political things I want to do. I don't have any grand political, but locally, I'm really involved now, and there's some things I want to do. I have another book I'm almost finished with, so I've got another. So now that Mike is bored, and you can't play golf in January in Pennsylvania, so he's going to come back and coach again next year. So it's kind of like a, so it's good for all of
You're
us.
handing things off back to your brother.
It is
He's
going to be
coming
good.
in for relief, I guess. Mark Messina is here. He is what are you? You're
I'm a
some
county
sort of official.
commissioner.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
What does that
I just
mean?
froze. Am I
Yeah.
froze on your
No,
scene?
you're for yeah, you freeze. You got Wi-Fi. You got Montoursville Wi-Fi, I guess, at this
I
point.
am sitting right by the server too. I thought this was the best place. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. You're just not moving, but
Oh, there we
that's
go.
okay. You're moving now. Go ahead.
So the way it works in Pennsylvania is each county has three commissioners, and you can't have all three of one party. So there's always two. So like in Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, there's two Democrats and a Republican. In the central part of the state where it's all rural, there's two Republicans and Democrat. And that's what. And we are kind of like the the board of that county. We oversee the budgets basically of everything, the sheriff's department, the 911 center, the court system, the jails, there we have, I think we have 28 different departments and 7 elected officials. So
And this is your home area, Williamsport, Hall of Fame, and Tooresville, that area, and that county is
like coming.
Lycoming. You say it that you went to Lycoming. I would say Lycoming. I'm pronouncing it wrong,
Well, I
right?
tell people that, and people do, but I tell them if you take the LY off, the word COMING is coming.
Right.
So it's just like coming. But
Lycoming.
either way, but yeah, then and up here, unlike down there, we're like 75% red. So, I'm a Democrat. I've always been a Democrat. So when it came, when the last guy retired and he didn't want to run again, and then they were like, well, there aren't really that many Democrats here to run, so I ran and I won.
High-paying position, I'm sure. No obligations, no responsibilities at all for the county, right?
No, none.
That's why it's been 6 months having him on. Mark Messina is here. I just bring you in to talk sports, man, and baseball and football. You're one of my favorite people to talk rock and roll with. We have this whole Tommy Conwell thing coming up here in Lancaster. Not Lancaster. It's Lancaster in Buffalo.
No.
It's Lancaster in Pennsylvania.
I was the PA announcer in college, and when I was in college for the basketball team, I introduced the starting lineups. And in basketball, that's where they're from. And I was verbally reprimanded for calling it Lancaster, because when we were young, I don't know, there was a basketball player named Lancaster Gordon,
Sure.
and that's how. And no, I the mom came over to me at halftime and like, it is Lancaster, and I said, oh, so there you go.
You never forget
I've
that.
never
You
forgot
never
that.
forget that. No, once you get, it's like Bowie and Tosin and all the things that go on here. Where is your sports mojo at this point? I mean, I full disclosure for you grew up a Yankees fan. You were always a little bit weird and demented. But your area in that part of Pennsylvania wasn't really Phillies or Pirates, certainly not Orioles. And my dad was from Scranton. My dad grew up a Yankees fan, saw Babe Ruth and Gehrig and all those guys play on the train, taking it into the city back in the last century. But your brother winds up pitching for the Yankees and all this. Like, I don't know where your attention would be for baseball this far in with the brother in the Hall of Fame and all that. You're not on radio, and I mean, are you watching 100 games a year? Do you watch baseball every night of your life, or are you a little more divorced from it?
Oh no, I'm way more divorced. And here, like, I grew up a Yankee fan because they were good in the 70s and they were on TV. Like, they were the game. We got Yankees, man. We got Phillies sometimes. We get
You got
Phillies.
the Scooter. Did you get the Scooter?
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah, you got
Frank Messer, Bill White, and Phil Rizzuto. And
Scooter.
so I'm a box score reader every night still. I love like the stories of, I follow McCutcheon every night to see how he's doing. I love Jose Ramirez. He's one of my favorite. I like Lindor. And then I have these, like, I follow Christian Yelich because he was, destined for everything, and then he kind of fell off the face of the earth. I still follow Verlander because he's 8 wins behind Mike on the all-time win list. So I am curious. I don't live and die with anyone. Obviously, I follow the Orioles and the Yankees the most. My son is an Orioles fan. We get to an Oriole game every year. So, and I just ordered him an Oreo pullover, but he's not home right now, so I
Is
don't.
that big? Is that mom an Oriole? Why would your kid be the Oriole out
Because
of?
when we were young, or when he was young, and we wanted to start going to baseball games, we came to Baltimore as opposed to going to New York because it was easier. I was more familiar with it. And back then, the Orioles stunk, and you could get cheap seats for nice, and it's just from where we are. It's an easy drive in, easy drive out, and then you walk around the Inner Harbor, and it was just a better trip. So we started going to Oriole games, and he liked the Orioles. So that was it. And
How
then
old is he now?
he is 18.
Oh,
He's a
he's
senior.
in. He's bird lay. He's drinking the Kool-Aid, is he?
Oh yeah, I'm giving him updates. Like, right, they played the other night. They played on opening day, and I was giving him updates and like, hey, this is what So yeah, he is a fan. He is a fan.
All right, what keeps you engaged? And I mean, I've had long form conversations recently with Dave Schein and people you know well, people you shared the locker room and media through your brother and through your own work with me, and what just your interest in baseball and your expertise in baseball. Shinen talks about pace of play and moving the game back has made him more interested. I'm more interested because the team's good, right? Like on a day-by-day basis of what dog food we've been fed here for much of my 34 years on radio, a handful of years where they've been relevant. I'm really interested in new ownership, $600 million, and what it's supposed to do for the Inner Harbor. I saw what the Ravens did with theirs. They moved the press box out to the upper deck, and they put in a club level that they're not going to use that they used to welcome Katie Griggs 2 weeks ago. So, I don't have a press pass. I'm never getting a press pass back. That's over with. The notion that they're going to have real media and answer questions, and it was the way it was 30 years ago, like that's never going to happen again. I'm trying to figure out the level set of baseball and its money and the media and the part where your brother was on the front lines as a player rep early on with the late great Jim Poole and other players during the work stoppage. Your brother was a part of that, and I was a part of that as a media member trying to learn. 31 years later, dude, crazy. 31 years later. We're still here with it, and I don't understand their money, and I don't understand the future of their money outside of being Yankees, Dodgers, and wherever. Because I've seen the Red Sox thing kind of fall apart a little bit from a how much I'm going to give, how much I'm going to spend, what my level of engagement's going to be, and I worry a little bit about baseball for the first time in my life because I feel like it's rudderless. And I don't think the game is so great that it's going to transcend rudderless.
Well, I mean, we've always been worried about baseball. You keep hearing this, and the strike of 94 was going to kill it, and it certainly didn't. And my thought is the lack of stars. And, when we were younger, not that we're old now, but when we were younger, and, you picked up the newspaper, and this is the first thing I did every day for 6 months. You picked up the newspaper and you looked at the pitching matchups. Because the star of the day was the starting pitcher. And now, because of the way the game has evolved, there are very, very few star starting pitchers anymore, to the point of when we pull up the game, the docket of games on our phone, it doesn't even list the starting pitchers. And I know that's a lot of spatial because your phone is different than the newspaper was. But
But it's
one
sort of
of
all you cared about on any given night. I mean, as a kid putting the newspaper out, it was always starting pitchers and splits and matchups because that's the game. That and the strike zone, as
Who's
your brother
pitching?
would say. Yeah.
Yep, who's pitching tonight? And now it's not as much. And it is, I think that has changed because you're right, it is star driven. Everything is star driven. And you look at the Caitlin Clark numbers at women's college basketball, and they can talk about, oh, it's turning a corner and all this stuff. When you look at the numbers when Caitlin played last year and the numbers when Caitlin didn't play this year, and they were night and day. And I think it was 14 million to 4 million. So
Well,
it
it's
is
golf with Tiger, golf without Tiger.
absolutely.
It's Van Halen with David Lee Roth or with, Gary Cherone. You know what I mean?
I
Like
was going to say, I knew you weren't going to Sammy because you and I are on the Van Hagar is a very good band. We believe that wholeheartedly. I
Sammy's
thought
gonna shake his ass the next couple weeks in Vegas, and I may go shake it with him. So
it
we're
is
working on that,
We have always been kindred spirits on the greatness of Van Hagar. Now, I love Van Halen too. I do, don't get me wrong.
That's a different conversation. Let's do that at the end of this one because we'll do
All
some
right.
Tommy Cummel too. I just want to keep you on baseball here because I get knowledge out of you. You don't do a lot of media. You're an elected official and all that. Brother's a Hall of Famer. My cousin's a Hall of Famer. So it's an Aparicio Messina thing. But we've been doing this for 30 years and we don't get together much. And once a year, I want to learn something from you about what you're seeing or not seeing in the game. I'm here in Baltimore and they're trying to resurrect it, Moose. You know what I mean? Like, I know you were here during the Halcyon and the glory and the 3.6 million people. And I know for lots of reasons. Peter lied to me about almost everything. The one thing he was dead on about was the Baltimore Washington split baseball thing that would be detrimental because of the money, because of the fans, all of that. They've won a World Series and have blown it up, and Strasburg's arm fell off, and like all of that happens. But for the Orioles and for this market and how it succeeds again here, really succeeds again here in that way that Luke dreams of St. Louis, or I see what the Tampa Lightning are in Tampa Bay and the Tampa Rays are not, where things succeed as opposed to fail. You saw the Ravens come in here and wildly succeed, where I don't know that you would have bet on that when they came in here wearing the Barney uniforms in 96 and we're going to go 4-12 every year, where it couldn't have gone off the rails and been Jacksonville, right? So for the Orioles, it feels like there's a rebirth here, but it feels to me like there's a lot of issues with the game, the money, the fact that the Orioles fan base is going to have to sing for its supper. Like, you want Gunnar Henderson? You got to be a mid to large market team to do that. And I don't know where that money's coming from, Moose. I really don't.
I think the teams that have kind of figured it out are, yeah, there are some teams that can afford a $100 million player, and there's some teams that can afford a $700 million player. So when you get a Gunnar Henderson, you have to sign him young. You have to sign him to an 8-year contract for $120 million, and it's hard for those people, for anyone, to turn down $120 million guaranteed, even though you say, well, if I played it out and I don't get hurt and things go right, and well, yeah, but that's what you've got to do. And Cleveland's done a little bit, Seattle's done a little bit, Atlanta's done a little bit,
Well,
and
Scott Boras has to do a little bit too, and the kid has to want to be there, right? I mean, I don't know why
correct.
Bobby Witt really wanted to be in Kansas City, but his dad played the game, and I don't know what advice you'd give to your kid or your brother would give to a kid, you know?
Yeah, and it's, I mean, there's a level of fear of injury. There's a level of fear. We've seen players that kind of got hot and then dropped off. And so, but that's your shot, because the Yankees at the back, and the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Red Sox and at the back end will be able to buy players. Once they go to free agency, there's only so many teams out there, and how many people can afford Juan Soto? So you've got to get them young and try to sign them young. And the thing about it that I keep reminding people is, when you look at the success of the Rays, even though they haven't won a World Series, but when you look, the Kansas City Royals have won a World Series more recently than the Yankees have. And I know the Yankees just got back there last year, but it is different. The thing that I think, and I've been saying this for 10 years now, so maybe I'll shut up because apparently I'm wrong. But the next Moneyball aspect of it is bringing back the left-handed pitcher, and it doesn't have to be Tom Glavine, it doesn't have to be a Hall of Famer, but the Mark Burleys, the Jamie Moyers, the Jimmy Keys, the guys who can give you affordable and consistent depth, and who can make 32 starts a year, that back when, again, in when we were in our baseball heyday, every team had one. Every good the Denny Nagels, every team had one that was the left-handed changeup cutter. I'm going to go 6 2/3. My ERA is going to be 3.75. But every 5 days, you don't have to worry about me. I'm going to give you a chance. And I was at a my son was playing in a summer league tournament, and this is when he was young. But baseball scouting, they start young. I think my kid was going into an eighth grade or whatever, but he was playing in an older division. And I'm sitting with a scout. Not a scout, an assistant coach from one of these Big East schools, one of these basketball schools like Seton Hall or UConn or one of those, and I can't remember which one it was, but he was on a baseball coach at this school, and we're talking about pitchers, and my son's left-handed, and he's talking about lefties, and he said, we have a guy who's right-handed who is a radar gun guy, and everybody loves his radar gun, but he's not our best pitcher, and we have a lefty, and he controls both sides of the plate. He changes speeds. And when you look at every baseball number he has, innings pitched, strikeouts, whip, walks per inning, every baseball number he has is better than this hard-throwing righty. And this lefty that we, and he's like, he throws hard enough, but he's our best pitcher by a lot. But no one will look at him, because the one number he doesn't have is the radar gun. And the guy's like, I don't get it, because I see him pitch every day, and his job is not to light up the radar gun. His job is to get hitters out, and he gets them out way better than this other guy. But there's this arrogance of, if he has it, if he has the radar gun, we can teach him. And it when you, for all of us who are sports fans of all over the world, if you just measured wide receivers by their 40 time, the Hines Wards, and the Anquan Boldins, and these guys can't play. But as we watch them play, and they're Hall of Famers, even though they're not in the Hall, they're elite players because they get it. Steve Largent, and I know now that's old, Steve Largent wasn't a stopwatch guy, but Steve Largent was a great player. And would Greg Maddux have even got a look nowadays? And would Mike Messina have even got a look? Because they don't, and it's, I don't know how that's for the better. And I think sooner or later there comes along a guy who the next Moneyball guy might not be in Oakland, might be in Pittsburgh, it might be in any mid-market in Minnesota, any mid-market, and he's like, listen, we will gobble up these pitchers that nobody else likes because they don't throw hard enough, but we think that we can compete with them economically, and I think that's the next evolution.
Well, I think the game's changed so much the Scott McGregors wouldn't make it, right? I mean, especially left-handed soft toss, finesse left-handers, and the notion that everything's max effort, and the notion that getting Tommy John surgery when you're 17 is not a thing. And you mentioned the star power of the game. That really is the issue, is that your brother took the ball, Randy Johnson, all those guys took the ball for 10, 15, 20 years at a clip. I mean, we got Palmer and Ben McDonald calling the games, and that's kind of the opposite, because Ben didn't turn out to be a Hall of Fame player, but also had arm problems, and like all of those things that modern science is supposed to fix to some degree, that Leo Mazzoni having those guys throw every day and swearing by it and keeping an arsenal of Hall of Famers healthy for a generation, that somehow that goes out the window with modern science. I just don't know who a young Mike Messina would be listening to. Who, dad, the ball coach, the doctors, the scout that wants you, the coach that wants you, who do you listen to? And Corbin Burnes is a great example of this dude, right? Like, he pitches every fifth day, and that's what he does. And you can't talk to him, and give me my 230. And I throw when I throw, and I throw the same way, and I eat the same way. He's one of those cats. I don't know. There ain't no such thing in baseball as that, because guys don't go every fifth day. They don't take the ball seven, eight innings. They're not thinking the way your brother thought. And look, man, you and me, your brother, we're all gray. I mean, it's a really a gener two generations ago, a baseball player. That has been long since gone, but the game's a little broken when these guys' arms are all falling off. I mean, the Orioles right now, as we sit here, we're talking about Eflin, we're talking about Suarez on 60, we're talking about Kittredge out, we're talking about Rodriguez maybe never making it, we're talking about Bradish maybe never coming back again. John Means, Tyler Wells. Those are just the Orioles I can name off the top of my head. Not to mention Rogers and a couple other guys, McDermott that they got, who can't pitch right now because they're injured. So that's the Orioles' arsenal right now, and we're a week into the season, Moose.
Well, and yes, and when my brother growing up, he was the best player in our little town, and he threw smoke in Little League and all the way. But when you get up and then he gets to college and he gets to the big leagues, and now he just throws like hard, and he throws hard enough. But at the end, he's throwing 89, 90 on a good day. He kind of lived at 88, 89, and when you watch these guys evolve as longtime baseball fans. And at the end, I saw a lot of CC Sabathia because we got the Yankee games here. And Sabathia, who's this big, dominant, 6'7", 260, whatever. And as a kid, he just threw it by you. And at the end of his career, Sabathia became really, really good at pitching to contact. And you're right, you can't. Mike has a line, he helps with the high school team, and Mike has a line, he's like, we get these kids who are trying to strike the kid out with the first pitch. And you can't, if I think there's those guys of the Maddox, the Glavins, that they don't try to strike the guy out until they have two strikes. And up until then, they're just worried about him keeping the ball off the barrel. Let's put it in play. If they put it in play, they'll put it in play softly. And if they put it in play softly, I'm going to win more often than not. And you're right, max effort. You can't, I mean, even
Could your
when,
brother have ever thrown the ball 100 miles an hour one time?
no. I don't, I
So if they
think.
said to Moose, you got to throw 96, 97, or you can't cut this here, his arm would have fallen off
Yeah,
trying when he was a
I don't
kid.
think he could have done it. Yeah, I don't think so. But it that is the and
Well,
there
you
was
hurt your arm pitching, right?
yeah, but that was just because I was bad mechanics and I was stupid. But there's also a level too. When I talk to kids, I'm like, listen, you want to kind of live at 90%. Like every pitch can't be 100% because you can't. You watch golfers, and you're not a golf guy. They're not trying to hit the ball 100% most of the time. They're trying to hit it well. But they're trying to hit it. It's more important to hit it where you want than it is to just hit it as hard as you can.
Well, golf,
So,
you're using the club, right? The club is it will dictate what you're trying to do, right?
yeah.
You should be
But you
swinging
watch
the club
most
the
bad
same way
golfers.
most of the time, and the club indicates that it's a different thing with pitching, right? I mean, grip, ball, what are we throwing? We off speed, who am I facing? Like all of that, and then the precision to do what your brother could do. As Eddie Van Halen once said to your brother in My Witness, how do you do that, man? How do you? It's pretty much like that, right? Is that pretty good?
It was close. It
Yeah.
was close. Yeah, I just on reels, which are going to be the death of me. I just watched an Eddie Van Halen. He talked about it when he played on Beat It. I just
Oh man, I could go all night with that ish. When I'm done, I thought I was going to read like Shakespeare or Hemingway. I'm just going to watch old rock and roll interviews. I mean, I got a whole career of Gina Shock I got to catch up on, man, let alone Tommy Conwell and Bon Jovi and everything else I'm there.
I
I
just
did see
saw
the
who was
Zeppelin
the.
doc was pretty good a couple months ago. So
Wait, who say that again? I'm
the
sorry.
Zeppelin doc was very, very good.
Oh, I
The one
just
that was
saw.
at a movie.
Did you post the picture of Gina with Slash?
I did.
Okay.
And Gina lost one of her best friends in life and Clem Burke from Blondie within hours of me texting her. Clem Burke's the only one that ever sat in with the Go-Go's when Gina was physically unable because Gina's had heart surgery, like all sorts of Gina's a survivor. And but Clem Burke from Blondie was real special to the band. So it's been a weird week, man, in rock and roll. But I want to go back to pitching again and max effort and guys' arms falling off because you talk about things that are really losing the game in that way. It's a very un There's a lot of things conspiring about the game, Moose, and that's the thing that in a lacrosse town here where kids have that choice. And Mark Viviano came out last week and tells me about 160 little leaguers he's got down in Severna Park playing baseball. And I've heard about the Under Armour thing going on down at the Ford Avenue baseball. And like, I get that. I drive around the suburbs. Every time the lights are on, they're playing lacrosse and soccer here. Trust me. I mean, I drive around. I see it.
Well, Baltimore has a chance right now with Gunner, with Holiday. Like, they have a chance because they have legitimate superstars. And the catcher who seemed destined for the Hall of Fame had a mediocre season last year. Now you wonder because you see catchers wear out. Like Mauer ended up wearing, and now Mauer's in the Hall of Fame. I'm not really sure how, but he caught for a while and then he ended up at first base, and it was not nearly as long lived as
Well,
we
Matt
thought.
Wieters, I mean, that was.
There's another, yeah, exactly. So we'll see, but they certainly have some guys who, you get the youngsters, you're like, oh, I hope he makes it, and then you get these guys like, whoa, this guy really could end up in Cooperstown. Now, there's so much between being 23 years old and getting to Cooperstown, but you got to be great when you're young, and they're great, and they have a chance to be great, and that makes it fun. It makes it fun to tune in every day. I remember, our old friend Paul Kopelke once told me, he's like, the re because we're just talking about why would anyone, why do radio stations want the Oriole rights, and why do. And he's like, because it's the daily TV show starring Cal Ripken. And he's like, and every day people will tune in to see Cal Ripken or to listen in this case. And I remember, I never forgot that. And that's why when you get through here, and I know starting pitchers are only once every 5 days, but it becomes an event. When Gunner plays, it's every day. So Gunner's that, but then you get that all-star pitcher or that guy who could, you believe he could throw a shutout today. He could throw a no-hitter today. And And if you have both of those, now you have a compelling story for 6 months. And assuming you have both of those, I assume you have enough parts around it that you have a good team. And baseball did a very good job of expanding the playoffs because it keeps interest more. And that's another thing I learned from my time in Pennsylvania, my time in Baltimore. Baseball is not the NFL. The national game of the week, no one cares about. Because when you live in a baseball market, your national game of the day is your team day after day after day after day. I don't need to watch Sunday afternoon to see the Cardinals and the Cubs. I don't, because I am hyper focused on, it's not like the NFL where, okay, my team plays Sunday afternoon. Who's the Thursday night game? Who's the Sunday night game? Because all these things matter. In baseball, you're just hyper focused. And when your team leaves the playoffs, a lot of the fans leave with it because their story has come to an end.
That's
So,
a hockey truth too. I mean,
yes.
yeah.
So that's it's just it's different. We just finished March Madness. March Madness has a national appeal to it because most people don't have that college basketball team in their neighborhood that they follow. They might have, they're a Duke fan or they're a North Carolina fan or whatever. But or in your case, you guys are Maryland fans. But it's just different. And for I think for a while, baseball saw football going where it was going, and they're like, we need to bring back, because when I was a kid in the 60s, the game of the week was, well, because the game of the week was the only game you can get. And now with all the other stuff, and we can get our own favorite team night after night after night after night. The national game of the week isn't. What baseball really learned later is to put the betting lines on the screen with the way football does. And that's one of the next evolutions, to embrace it instead of running away from it, because the short-term investor really helped the NFL and college football take off.
Well, and I said this 3, 4 years ago when gambling came on here. I said, I've been doing radio 30 years, and even the most degenerate gamblers I've ever known, and I've known a few, so have you, never bet on baseball. I mean, I didn't even know how to bet 7.5 on pitchers and this and that. I mean, it's like throwing darts. It was not a part of the conversation in the way that the Ravens are favored by 4 this weekend would be, in the same way that basketball spreads were never. Maybe in March Madness, you'd have a little bit of 28-point favorites of 15 and a 2 seed or whatever. But baseball gambling now, they see that as, Katie Griggs is writing down, that that's a money pit for them in some way, because there are so many diverse ways to bet on a baseball game that I guess will become interesting to gamblers, in the same way that degenerates I knew sat in left field and all put a dollar in the bucket and they found 18 people. Whoever hit the home run first got the $18 to keep the game interesting or whatever. That's going on every minute of every game now. I'm not a gambler in that way, but baseball sure hopes you are about to become one, because I would see that as a level of engagement for them that they're not going to find any other way once our generation starts to die off,
Well, and you get, yes, the different aspect where it's not just about point totals and over-unders. How many rushing yards does someone have? How many touchdown passes does someone throw? And in baseball, it's just the same way. Total bases for a hitter, RBIs for a hitter, strikeouts for a pitcher. And there are all these little nuances that people, it allows the baseball nerds to really get into it. And I had heard, someone had told me once upon a time, the handle on baseball in Vegas is way higher than you think it is, just because there's so many games every day. And
And if you're there, right? If you're in the moment, now you don't have to be in Vegas. You're there every minute with your phone,
right.
which is, I do commercials about, watching that and being careful of that. 3 years ago, I would have said nobody's ever going to bet on baseball. I don't believe that anymore. You know what I mean? And from a revenue standpoint, that's a place that they're going to see revenue when they're shutting down the upper deck and making the stadium smaller. And they have in lots of these markets now where come to all the games and just walk around and be a part of it and take advantage of the $5 Birdland menu. That's great. That's awesome. I don't know how that that finances Gunnar Henderson. And that's my concern for it as to where the real revenue's coming from to pay for all of it. That's all. And I'll continue to ask that question in a market like this until I see the kind of money following baseball that's going to need to follow it in order to compete.
Well, but don't you think, and I get your point if you look at it on a basic level, but I think in society, I think I've seen it post-COVID, now this goes political, that the difference between the haves and the have-nots just keeps getting wider in our society. And, you take the owner of the Mets who has so much money that he just doesn't care. And you don't need, it's not as much about fan bases. It's not as much about how much can you charge per ticket and what the bottom line is. It's do you have 30 owners that are so rich that they'll lose $50 million and don't care? And I think the
They didn't get rich not caring, just as an
no, I
example.
get that. But now that
And
they're
Peter
old.
went out over his skis for a couple. When your brother left is exactly when Peter went in over his skis. I've written about this. 02, 03, 04. He went in 25 million large with the Segui deal and Conine and those deals. Sidney Ponson after Albert Bell, all of that. And then it was no more after that. Then McPhail took over and they ran it nut on nut, even in 14 and 15 when they put some more money in. They weren't, he learned his lesson on it. Now, the kids all hit the walk-off grand slam with the billion eight at the end after making $1 million a day every day they own the team. I did the math on that. $1 million a day every day they own the team is what they walk with after all the profit. But I'm with you. I don't know whether David Rubenstein's a sugar daddy or not, but I did go out and hear his speech in November, and he said in front of the congregation, this industry tends to spend what you have. And I'm thinking, well, that won't be good enough here long term. That's
Well,
not
and
that long term.
yeah, so let, and I don't know David Rubenstein from Adam, and I never heard of him before he took the team. But so there, if you're this rich guy, and how did David Rubenstein get rich?
Carlyle Group, money
Okay.
management. Yep.
Okay. So he has a very anonymous, rich, like obviously rich beyond his
He
wildest
doesn't
dreams.
want to be anonymous. He's
Like,
got a podcast. He thinks of himself as a bon vivant. Here's how famous he is. You ready? He's got a bobblehead next Saturday night.
okay, so
I'm just saying.
when
David
you
likes
talk
David
about
being out in front of this. So.
the guys that are being, they didn't get rich by wasting money. I get it, but it now there's a they did all these intelligent things to get rich, and now they have the look at
Boy,
me. And
he's
anyone,
74, by the way.
yeah, so anyone who wants to own a professional sports franchise wants attention. They want people to look at me because I could make better investment, not me, but they could make better investments
They could
and live.
certainly make more quiet, happier investments.
Yes, and live anonymously and live. But if you have the look at me, you got to make a splash. And if they lose money and pay for the attention, then there are always going to be guys like that.
I'm worried that we have one of those guys. You know what I mean? I don't know what kind of guy we have here.